dwelling in the darkest depths of the mind. It's time for Mark DiValenti and Brain Burrow.
Hello, everyone. This is Mark DiValenti, and this is another episode of Brain Burrow. This is one of our Digging Deep sessions where we have a chance to talk with our guest, and the guest has a chance to share about themselves. What do they fear? What do they value? What do they hope to do with their lives? And then you as a listener and viewer have a chance to say, how does this relate to me? So I'm very pleased to have on the show today, Mr. Robert Geronimo, and I'm going to ask him the big open-ended question, who exactly is Robert Geronimo?
Man, nice to meet you too. I will say Robert Geronimo is, I'm trying to figure that out every day, but at my core, I'm a storyteller.
That's a very succinct and powerful answer there, Robert. So let's dig a little deeper. What does that mean to be a storyteller?
Basically, to exercise all of my demons on pen, through pen on paper. That's what I would say it is. Isn't that every artist and every storyteller, right? We're exercising everything.
That's a good way to look at it. So the question is, how is that working out for you?
So far, it's working out. I have to say, I'm very fortunate that there are people who like to read the stories that I'm telling, and they enjoy me pouring myself out onto the pages and everything like that. So it looks like they're just as sick as I am.
Well, that's fantastic. I mean, that's a great affirmation of your work and ideas if they're reading it.
Right.
But how does, you know, so there's a balance, right? Because you said you exercise your demons by doing that, right? Which is very personal. And then there's the other sort of looking at other people and sort of saying, is this being approved or not? So what happens if people don't like what you produce?
If they don't like it, then, you know, you have to be humble and say, okay, I have to reassess. Because if there's, well, that's a segue into a fun little story, because one of my idols is Clive Barker.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. And, when I read Hellbound Heart, I was just, I knew this was the genre I needed to be in, especially that type of horror, what he calls the fantastique. And I loved it so much. I read it multiple times when I was like 14, 13, probably maybe a little too young to be reading Hellbound Heart, but I drew a portrait of him.
Oh.
And I mailed it to him. And lo and behold, I don't know if it was several months or a year later, my mother says, there's a letter in the mail for you from Clive Barker. Really? Wow. And he wrote this eloquent, beautiful letter.
Wow.
And it's a beautiful letter. And if there's one line that really stuck out that's in relation to what we were talking about, he told me, when you create and you put your work out there, always trust the audience's response. Hmm. And I think that's a powerful statement.
That is actually interesting. Congrats on getting the letter from Clive. That's pretty cool.
I still
cool.
have it. I have to frame it somewhere.
Yeah. I was going to say, I'm surprised it's not, you know, right there behind
it
you right
should
there.
Be. Should be.
Yeah. So I guess, was there a time then whenever that those immortal words, trust the audience response, kind of really played out for you, or whenever you, or like, I guess the question is, how has that been incorporated into your life and in your art?
I would say, obviously when I put something out there, you know, are they enjoying it? Because at the end of the day, I could exercise my demons all I want. Are they enjoying it? Because you still have to make it entertainment no matter what, you know? So I feel like with every artist, there is this mask, you know, what's very personal, we're pouring ourselves out, but also there is this mask of entertainment that needs to be there, you know, in order for it to be consumed, you know? So you're trying to kind of translating it. So far, they've been enjoying that response, like I said, and the way I've been telling my stories and stuff like that.
That's excellent. I like the way you sort of describe that mask, you know, the superficiality of it in a way that what you project out there.
Right.
Yeah. And oftentimes, you know, there's a condition called smile mask syndrome that was identified in South Korea, where a lot of students who were at a university there, and people can look this up to fact check or get these specific details if they're interested. We're struggling with feelings of nausea, just feeling down. And they were going to the school counselor there. And it turned out that these students also worked in the service industry. So as a result of them constantly smiling and constantly putting on this happy face, and in reality, we're not always happy all the time, that sort of disconnect was causing these physical symptoms.
Oh, wow. That's really interesting.
Right? So it's called smile mask syndrome. I guess the question is, Robert, have you ever experienced that? Have you ever had you're putting this mask out there and not really matching the feelings within it? And how have you handled that?
Not really matching the feelings. I'm pretty blunt with my feelings in my art. It's a very aggressive style, the way I work. I have a comic book series called Blood Realm that's published by Alterna Comics, and it's very visceral at times. You know, it's like I don't hide the hand. Now, usually some artists, especially with digital, which I think is great, you mask and you can almost, you refine it to such a point where, you know, the hand of the artist is gone. And I really maintain my mistakes, the splatter all over. Sometimes I'm very aggressive with the page, you know, and I'm got the toothbrush and you could see this thing here and I'm just, you know, just getting that ink all over. So it's very much me in the artwork, if that makes sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense, right? I mean, so it sounds like your mask, as you say, is pretty much representative of who you are at a visceral level.
Right, right. And if it's a story that I cannot feel I can do that and be that truthful with the art in a particular story, I will definitely have someone else draw it. So like, for instance, I have a story called Wirehead, which is a slasher book that just came out. That one I wrote, but Blood Realm, I illustrate and write, because I felt that in order for this story to be effective, it needed to have a certain look. So I felt my look maybe might not be the proper visual style.
Interesting. So it's really about humility. It's being confident in who you are, but also recognizing your limits.
Absolutely. I think that's very important.
Awesome. So obviously, as you said, you've been into the arts, you've been into creativity for quite some time. But at what point did you realize that writing, that creative outlet, was just that, a creative outlet to exorcise your demons, as you say?
When did I realize that? I guess maybe it comes from being an only child. I was always creating all the time. I had a cat who was like the closest thing to a brother. He felt like a brother when I was growing up. Okay. I was four and he was a kitten. So we kind of just grew up together, but it was just me. So I would keep myself occupied. My mind was constantly going, and my action figures were really like my best friends too. So this igniting the imagination was constant. You know, so you kind of have to learn as an only child on how to occupy yourself and how to make things adventurous for yourself. So toys and drawing and stories played a big role in that.
I see you got very creative with these objects and, you know, obviously the cat in your life.
Yes.
Okay. That's cool. Now, this sounds like such a therapy question, but so tell me about what role did your parents or, your have in growing up as well? Because obviously your childhood was very influential in who you are today.
Yes. So my mother was the one who introduced me to art and she introduced me to comic books. She's a huge Superman fan. My father is a former Marine. He was a Vietnam veteran and he didn't really care for that stuff too much, you know, understandable,
right?
Especially after Vietnam, he went and became a correction officer. So very, very different, you know?
Sure.
But my mother was the one who really got me into art and took me to a museum and bought me my first comic book at a grocery store, believe it or not. That's when comics used to be everywhere.
Oh, yeah, you know? right.
You know, you didn't even realize it, but they were there. Now, not so much anymore. So, but there is this kind of dark element of growing up with someone, though, my father, who has PTSD. You know, he has leukemia from Agent Orange, you know, in Vietnam. So hearing about Nam, you know, this was something it felt like this faraway, dark place that I feel like I was so attached to it. Because when you grow up with someone with post-traumatic stress disorder, it's you're kind of feeling that, you know, it's like the repercussions of that incident, you know, the sins of the father pass on to the son, you know, so dealing with living with someone like that, you know, it's where just in a moment's time, he's there, you know, and we're here, but he's there. So it was very interesting. So that plays a big role in my art because, you know, everybody was drawing nice sunshine rainbows, but I was drawing monsters, getting their heads chopped off on monsters, drawing people,
wow.
You know, and in retrospect, I see like, you know, yes, my mother showed me this outlet, but then when I see what my father went through in Vietnam growing up and hearing some stories when we, you know, as I got older and he was more open to talk about things, you know, my stories felt like, no, but there is a grim reality, you know?
Wow.
Yeah.
That's extremely insightful, you know, as far as looking at it's very emotionally intelligent answer of kind of knowing yourself, how you got to a point and how you incorporated your surroundings and other people's experiences right. into your own.
Yeah.
It's pretty Thank cool. You. No, yeah. I mean, it's definitely a skill set to be able to do that. So I like to ask the question, what gets you up in the morning? I mean, what motivates you? What drives you?
Oh, what drives me? Honestly, it's, I need to create and I need to be telling some kind of story. And I have a backlog of stories I want to do. So when I get up, first thing I want to, I think about my readers and the backers of my projects. And I think about, okay, how can I connect with them? You know, what story could I work on that maybe they'll like and that, you know, they'll enjoy and I could entertain them. So it's, that excites me coming up with stuff like that, especially when you know your audience and you see the regular people online and everything. So you kind of create this community.
Oh, wow. That's very powerful to be able to create that community, as you said.
Yeah, it's great.
Well, you know, and as somebody who's, you know, confident, somebody who knows sort of what they like to do yourself, mm-hmm. somebody who's also humble, has there ever been a time in your life, you know, where you've doubted yourself?
When I've doubted myself? I mean, yeah, absolutely. Okay. I believe that doubt is good because through doubt comes insight, you know, so you kind of have to do it. It's that leap. You know, you have to, because after that, then you have the knowledge. So, you know, I think it was Derek Jarman in the movie Caravaggio. He said, long live doubt.
Hmm. Great call out to that.
Yeah.
Well, and I think that's a great point, right? There's actually a lot of studies and research that shows that people that have some level of self-doubt actually perform better in school and athletic activities and just in different tasks because they just have just a little bit of questioning. Because as human beings, you know, if our ancestors who lived out in the woods didn't have some sense of doubt of sure. like what's up there, they'd be like running into caves with tigers and things like that. You know, there's a reason why, right? So it's when it becomes crippling and it prevents you from doing things. That's when it's an issue, obviously. So
right.
I think you have Absolutely. A great balance, though, it sounds like, in your life about just the right amount of it.
Oh, thank you, doctor.
I'm just listening to you. It's all coming from within you. I'm just, you know.
Oh, answering. You're reaching. You're pulling it out.
It's a great symbolism there. But anyway, yeah. Yeah. So I guess, you know, what's next for you? Because you seem very driven. So I'm just wondering, you know, what's next for you?
My plans with my stories and stuff
Could
like
be.
That?
Whatever you want to, okay. however you want to answer that question.
I just want to keep building my audience and connect with people who enjoy reading my stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all these people are like, oh, I want the big, you know, Netflix deal. I want you know, the multi-million dollar, you know, I want to connect with people who enjoy my stuff, the hardcore people, even if it's just 1,000, those are the people I want, you know, because those people who support you are going to support you no matter what you do. Well, not no matter what, but you know what I mean? They'll be there for you.
Yes.
And I think those are the types of people that I think are very important when you're growing. And right now I'm trying to get that community going. So far it has very nice little roots. Things are going great. And now I just want to expand it more.
Well said. So why is it so important to you? In other words, you're talking about a strategy here, which makes sense as you're growing it, but why is it so important for you to have people appreciate your work?
It's to appreciate, but also, and this is, I don't mean to be, it's like a selfish thing, but I would love for this to make enough money where I can just do this forever.
Sure.
Yeah. You know,
yeah.
Right. And that we're all in this for, but, you know, I'm being realistic, you know, it's like, I would love to just wake up in the morning and just have to just make stories for my 9 to 5, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a strategy involved. And is it being selfish? I mean, we're all selfish on a level. We're right. all doing things right for right. ourselves. Well, you know, whatever sure. that is. Yeah. I think that's a great point though. It's, you know, I personally would be great to, you know, act and do all those things. And that's all I would do as opposed to, you know, my real job, which I, you know, by the way, do like, I do actually enjoy it a lot, but it's
right,
just,
same.
But yeah, but it's still that same part of it. Right. And it's hard to live like two different lives at the same time, basically with these different elements.
It is, it is. And it's one thing I'm fortunate is that I try to maintain the day-to-day job in the art field as well. So I teach. You know, I like working with college students and helping forming them, you know, and to discover and kind of what you're doing with me pulling out, I'm pulling out their style, you know, and I get great satisfaction out of that.
Right. So you're really motivated about mentoring people in some ways and helping them realize their full potential.
Oh yes. Yeah. Yeah. Cause one thing about me and, you know, I'm sure, you know, working with people in your field of work and, mm-hmm. Yeah, you get the people who like don't want to tell you the secrets. Everything's a big secret. Oh, I can't tell you that. Or they're very coy about things. I'm an open book, you know, because how else are people going to know? They need that one person who's going to be real and tell them like it is. And I think you need more people like that.
Yeah, I think that's well said. I think that people, and it's not surprising you say that because you, again, appear to be very confident. It's usually the people that have less confidence that are afraid sometimes to share, right? Because they don't, you know, because then all of a sudden they don't have this thing that yes. makes them special, or at least they feel that way. So it's interesting.
That's a good point. That's a really good point.
Yeah. And then there's another a book I've actually referenced on the show before. It's called Radical Candor by Kim Scott. Mm. And it's really saying that especially in our Western society, that actually a lot of societies that we struggle with the way we communicate, and it's almost like a quadrant. It you know, I'll again reference it. I probably put an image up as I'm talking about this when I edit this, mm-hmm. but it's really saying that, you know, the science of radical candor means that you care deeply, but you're very direct in what you're caring about, you know? So mm-hmm. what we find is if you don't care about somebody, but you're very direct, then you have what we call obnoxious aggression, where you're basically saying, I don't want to talk to you. And, you know, cause I don't really care. Right. And the one thing though, where people care a lot, but they are not direct, is called ruinous empathy. So we don't ever tell anybody that their work is no good. And we see this happening with children all the time, right?
Oh, yes.
Children grow up in a household and everything they do is perfect. And then all of a sudden, yeah. right. And then the children go out into high school and all this other stuff. And they're told, no, you're not perfect.
Oh,
you're familiar with this concept.
Very familiar with it, and helicopter parenting and stuff like that I have to deal with. And, you know, it's that's a whole nother conversation, and you're 100% right.
Yeah. So maybe it isn't a whole other conversation because okay. it seems that you've had some experience with it. I'm yes. sure in your teaching.
Yes. Yes, definitely. And one thing I see that it creates severe anxiety.
I'm sure.
Severe. I mean, to the point where I've had students, right when we're ready to critique, they vomit.
Oh, wow.
And they have to leave the room. And then they ask me privately, can you only critique me away from everyone else and in a separate room?
Wow.
And the thing is, though, and you can't quite cater to that because, you know, you're not doing them a favor. You
right.
know? You just can't.
You're being ruinous empathy, you know, using ruminous empathy yourself.
Yes.
I continued it on, right? So,
yes.
Yeah. So, I mean, that must be challenging for you in some ways, though, to kind of constantly have these therapy type questions, you know, conversations with the students.
It happens. It happens a lot. And I have to say, it starts from exactly what you said, from the parenting and then even middle school.
Yeah.
And then even high school, too, because I do a couple of workshops at high school. And you know, it was interesting to see where, because, you know, I teach the college level. So it was fascinating in high school to see why they are the way they are when I get them. So I did a couple of comic book workshops there. And I was like, oh my God, it is a free for all. They know they're going to pass. There's no threat of failing because the school just wants to just quickly just check it off to the next one. You deal with it.
Yeah.
I've had students who, when I teach art history, I mean, some of them are sophomore juniors. How do I write a paper? And I said, I don't understand. What did you do prior? And they said, well, you know, we didn't really have to do much of it.
Wow.
And I'm literally teaching these kids, young adults, how to write a analysis. And
wow,
this is in the middle of their college degree. So it's something that I see that's very troubling, and I'm very real with my students and I tell them like it is. And it's funny, in today's time, I think people are so afraid to do that. And it's true because, you know, all these colleges are walking on eggshells because at the end of the day, it's a business.
Yes.
They want to please everybody. But at the end of the day too, you're not helping any of these young minds, you know?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point. And in the business world, it's also the same thing, right? You're kind of taught that emotions are bad in the business world too, right? You can't go through, you can't talk about it. You got to be a robot basically,
right?
Which is where that care deeply part of the quadrant, it goes less and less because you're not supposed to care deeply. You're not supposed to, but it sounds like you, based on what you said already today, care deeply about these students and their success.
I do, because, you know, I didn't have any connections when I got out of college. I didn't know anybody. I had to go to I didn't even have a proper, my bachelor's degree was not at a very good art school at all. I mean, it wasn't even an art school.
Okay.
And I really had to take extra classes, teach myself, look for places elsewhere where I can learn. And I'm thankful because one of the professors at this school told me that if you want to be an artist, you need to do something else outside of this, because this place will just, it'll give you nothing but debt.
Oh, wow.
I'm very fortunate that he was very honest with me. So I know what it's like when you're out there and you're also young and you're afraid, you think you have to look like you know everything.
Mm.
But really, you know, believe me, it's easier to get through it knowing like I need to learn everything. I need to ask questions and not worry about if someone's going to be like, oh, you don't know that. Who cares? The heck with them.
And it sounds like you're that person who said that to you about the, you know, going into debt was radically candid with you as well. And that it was impactful. Well, that's another good point too, right? I mean, we live in a society where you're not allowed to make mistakes, you know, and in reality, as we all know, as humans, we make mistakes.
Yes, absolutely. So, and we change and we evolve and we learn.
Right.
You know, and that's something I'm seeing too in a recent groups of students, is that this is where I really put my foot down, is when I see students who are afraid to tell the stories they want to tell.
Oh.
Because they're afraid they're going to be called whatever.
And interesting.
I'm talking students of every color, religion.
Hmm.
You know, they're all afraid that they're going to be labeled something and they'll never be able to work again because they see what goes on in the culture today. And I tell them, you tell the stories how you want to tell it. You have to. You cannot censor yourself like that. How else are you going to learn and grow?
Right. You're entirely right about that. Yeah. It's about taking risks and putting yourself in uncomfortable situations. And that's how, to your point, you learn and grow.
Absolutely. What, one of the most uncomfortable situations for me, and like you said, risk, it was putting myself out there for a Kickstarter, my very first one. Believe it or not, I was doing children's books before horror.
Oh.
Horror was my first love,
but yes.
I felt like I couldn't make money in horror, or I felt like, oh, who's going to read my horror stories?
Mm-hmm.
This is the young Robert, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And eventually I was like, well, you know, children's books. I took an incredible illustration course at Brooklyn College, which is a great school, with Bruce Deegan, the co-creator of the Magic School Bus. And he was very helpful, and he helped me drive out this art skill that I had in there. And he was like, you need to start telling stories. So I pursued the children's book thing, and I went and put myself out and did a Kickstarter. And it was very nerve-wracking trying to self-publish, because the publishing and all that stuff, but this is before I got officially published with comics, it's just a whole nother thing. And I said, I want to do this myself. I want to have that autonomy. And eventually, you know, with enough getting myself out there and talking to friends, family, trying to contact newspapers, websites. Let me tell you, Kickstarter, you don't run a Kickstarter. Kickstarter runs you. Okay. And eventually when I got that funding, I did New York Comic Con. And that was one of the biggest moments, because I said, wow, I want to go New York Comic Con with this book, but I've never put myself out there like this. I never was a salesman. How do I talk about my stuff? How do I talk to all these people who are going to walk by my booth? you know, I wasn't teaching at that point or anything like that. And suddenly I realized that I have to be the person that I need to be for this. Otherwise, I'm not going to make any money and no one's going to know who I am. And I kind of just switched on this button. Like, you always wanted to be this guy. You always wanted to be this kind of person. Be it. And then suddenly I walked in, the lights went on at the show. People started coming in and I was just, it's almost like I was unconscious. And I kind of had this awakening where it's like, I'm not really afraid to talk to people anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
I like the way you said that, an awakening where it almost like it switched.
It switched.
Wow.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that story.
Oh, sure. It
was clearly a very monumental opportunity. So I'm going to ask you another question. And of course, I'm asked questions. You know, again, as somebody who's continuously looking and trying to improve and learning from mistakes and putting themselves out there, what's one thing that you're trying to improve about yourself? Like, what's something you think, Robert, you're like, okay, I got to do this differently. I got to change this about myself.
It is probably, I would say, marketing and connecting with my audience in a greater level or a deeper level. And okay. More personal level. And for me, it's been right now, my YouTube channel, where I'm connecting them directly. Hey, let's talk about the story. Let me talk about the origin of the story. And, you know, you guys enjoyed it. Let me show you what I might have in store next. Let me hear your thoughts. And we have a live discussion, a live stream. My channel is Geronimo Draws. And sometimes I even do draw streams as well, where now, all right, guys, we're going to draw one of the characters together. And it builds, and look, it starts small. This is the thing. You're not going to get the thousands of views first.
Sure.
You know, but hey, let it build. Let people talk about it. Just get the group of people who believe in you first. And that's what really counts. And that I want to do more. And that I know I should be doing more. And I'm going to be more active at it.
Yeah, really building that community, as you say.
Yeah.
So thank you for sharing that. It's not always easy to talk about our vulnerabilities and the things we want to improve. So obviously.
It's important.
Yeah, it is important. You're entirely right. And just verbalizing it yourself, it shows that you have a grasp on that. So thank you for sharing that. We are actually almost out of time. So
Wow.
Yeah. You know. So I was wondering, maybe my last question is, what bit of advice would you give to people out there listening or viewing this? If you had to give any advice on anything, because I know you have a lot of thoughts on behavior. Yeah. So I'm just wondering what advice you'd give.
In terms of just being a storyteller or something like
whatever
that.
Whatever you like, whatever you think people may benefit from listening.
Be fearless in your creativity. That's what I'll tell them. Be completely fearless.
That is a fantastic and powerful bit of advice. And it reflects everything you've talked about in the last 30 minutes. So thank you for sharing that. Yeah, Robert, I want to thank you for kind of digging a bit deep and talking about your passions and your life and just things that that motivate you. So thank you for appearing on the show today.
Oh, thank you for having me. This was great.
Yeah, my pleasure.
I'm going to go cry in the corner now.
We can have a conversation after.
Okay, good. Thank you.
No, but seriously, thank you so much. And also, of course, I want to thank the listeners and viewers out there for tuning into Brain Burrow. And on behalf of Robert Geronimo, this is Mark D. Valenti. Have an amazing rest of your day.
You just dug deep with Mark D. Do you want more? Follow Mark on Instagram at @ValentiHorror and subscribe to the Brain Burrow podcast.